We are here in Hannibal, Missouri with Archie Hayden, a retired trainman with the CB&Q, later the Burlington Northern, then BNSF Railway. Mm-hmm. He can tell us about his experiences and his memories of the depot. And I'm Richard Leonard. I'm here with Janet Smith, who is the president of the Keokuk Union Depot Foundation, and Robert Woodburn, who is the secretary of the foundation. And so we're going to talk to Mr. Hayden about his reminiscences of Keokuk, working in Keokuk, and especially his memories with the depot. To begin with, you were a trainman on the CB&Q. Did you work out of West Quincy?
When we began, we worked out of Hannibal.
Out of Hannibal.
Hannibal was our terminal.
Yes, okay.
Sir. Yes, sir.
But you told me by email that you kind of didn't care for that long run to St. Louis, and from time to time you would rather work closer to home, so you decided to transition from time to time to being a switchman in the yards in Keokuk.
And also, Hannibal had a yard at the time. Hannibal mm-hmm. was a bigger yard than Keokuk, but we lost it in 1978, when we moved the terminal to West Quincy. They just pulled completely out of Hannibal because every year, or maybe every other year, floods would get us. And it was a real headache, you know, to put up with the floods. So there was a urban legend that went along with that. In the strike of 1922, one of the Burlington officials, who was opposed to the unions, of course, made a statement, well, I'm going to turn Hannibal into a whistling post. Hmm. In other words, I'll see to it someday that this yard or this facility doesn't exist any longer because of the opposition he was finding. And he finally did, maybe 75 years later, but it took place. Now, you mentioned in 1963, they merged seniorities of yard men and road men, and they dovetailed everybody in, but the men who was on the road had prior rights to the road, and the men that was in the yards had prior rights to the yard. So say a guy came out of the yards with 50 years of seniority. He couldn't bump a guy on the road that only had 1 or 2 years seniority because that fella had prior rights. So this took place in 63. Now, as I shared, I worked the Hannibal yard most of the time when I didn't work the road. But then when we lost it, the only yard left was Keokuk and Fort Madison. Fort Madison had a yard for a short time.
So when you worked in the Keokuk yard, you stayed overnight at the depot, I think you told me.
A few nights I did. If I worked an afternoon shift and was going to come back and work the daylight the next day, I wouldn't drive all the way to Hannibal and then all the way back up just for, you know, in the span of about 8 hours. What I would do is there was a bunk room in the depot second floor. And I think you all have plans to do something with that area up there someday. Prior to that, becoming a bunk room, that's where like the dispatchers and some of the office personnel had offices.
I think the operator was up there and
I think he
originally
was.
Could control that semaphore.
Right, right.
The train order board.
And so, but you kind of have to back up. Well, how did that bunk room get upstairs? At one time, the bunk room was down by the roundhouse. Have you ever seen pictures of that area?
There are very few pictures of the roundhouse.
Right.
Or anything happening down there.
It was a coach.
A coach.
Sitting on the ground. Mm-hmm. And they did that at the bunk room for the roundhouse. They also did that for the yard office, which was on the south side of that. We called it Blood Creek, Blood Run or something. And it was because of the hog rendering plants that were up on the hill.
Oh.
And that water, they just throw all the stuff in that creek. So we called it Blood Creek. So there were two coaches right there within probably a stone's throw of one another. And there's some stories I'll have to tell you about them as we go along.
But those coaches were gone by the time you...
Yes, the one that served as a yard office lasted the longest. They tore it down sometime in the mid-80s. it appeared there during World War II, because I talked to a retired switchman from Keokuk on the phone, and he said, when I went to the war, there wasn't a coach there for the yard office. He said, when I came home from the war, that coach had been set on the ground and made into an office. The other coach, I don't know how long it had been over at the roundhouse, but if you ever go on the Facebook page for Historic Keokuk, they have some wonderful aerial shots taken in the 50s and 60s mm-hmm. by this Gradel.
Yes, I've seen them.
And if you search through those aerial photos, you'll find two or three that show real good the roundhouse and the yard office photos. Mm-hmm. And I want to write my memoir someday. And so I'm trying to talk to folks at the library to see if I can find who has all the scans of the Gradel collection.
That sounds like it'd be a fascinating memoir.
Well, you know, I'll tell most of it will center around Hannibal and the history of the railroads right. in and around Hannibal. But, you know, we worked all the way to Burlington, all the way to St. Louis.
But when you worked as the yard in Keokuk, mm-hmm. you stayed in the depot.
I did. If, as I shared, it was, you know, going from a afternoon shift to a daylight shift. Now,
were there any beds there?
There were. There were beds, and they weren't very good beds, but they were beds nonetheless. But in the wintertime, there wasn't any heat up there. So a few nights, and I tried electric blankets, but I was afraid that that would electrify me or something. So what I did was I took the mattress from the bed. I took it downstairs into the depot, the first floor, where there was heat. And I placed it on the picnic table, and I slept on top of a picnic table on that mattress. But then I was afraid I was going to roll over and break my neck, but I didn't.
We have a memory of a crewman on, I think it was by that time, the Norfolk and Western, coming into Keokuk
right.
and sleeping up there on cardboard.
Oh, my goodness.
The mice ran over his feet during the night.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt that.
But you weren't subject to that quite that primitive a condition.
No, they had running water and electricity, but uh-huh. that's just about all they had.
Right.
No heat.
What was the time span of your employment with the railroads?
Well, I started in 1966, and I retired in 2006, so 40 years and 2 months.
So you made it through Burlington Northern Santa Fe and BNSF.
I did. And it seemed like the more mergers that we went through, the rougher it got, you know, with the officials, because mm-hmm. what they would do, this could have been Universal Forever merger, they would bring men off of the other railroad into our territory to operate, and they would send the men who was operating like officials, they'd send them down to the other railroads. I don't know why they did that, but maybe they thought, if you were too familiar with your official too long, you might get to be friends with them. They wanted to keep it, you know, kind of impersonal, I'd say.
So did you have any personal difficulties with the merger with Santa Fe?
Not really. About that time, we were beginning to, one of the rules that had changed and was so hard to adhere to was getting off and on moving equipment. Mm-hmm. That's how we did it, the whole career almost, until right there at the end. And they changed the rule to say, you can only get off when the equipment has stopped. You know, those old days of getting off and on cars or engines while it was moving were now an offense that if you were, and they gave us, I'll give them credit, they gave us a couple years to try and break those habits. But then they finally said, that was the last day, and we'll fire you if we catch you doing it again. And they did.
Wow.
Now, I didn't, but my conductor got fired once or twice.
So as a switchman in Keokuk, what kind of thing were you doing? Switching out the industries?
Right. Most of the industries, well, other than, there were two down along the river. There was steel casting and electrometal. And, of course, Hubinger was mm-hmm. big. But back in the day, do you know where the Presbyterian Church sits on the hillside by the depot?
Sure.
Yes.
That was like a big oat factory.
I've seen
that.
They
made oats.
Purity.
Purity.
Purity oats. Mm-hmm. So there was a ton of industries, but by the time I was working, those three were the bigger down on the river, and then the rest of it was on the hill, what we called going up the moor line, out towards, well, I guess that'd be the northwest section of town. You had Midwest Carbide, Griffin Wheel, General Mills, a Stone Container.
Was ADM out there too?
Well, that was General Mills.
I see.
Yes, sir.
And Stone Container used to be Horner Box.
Horner Box, that's right. That's right. And then also we had a place that made like dashboards and things for cars.
Yep, Sheeler, my father worked there.
Sheeler Globe. Sheeler Globe.
Sheller, yeah.
Sheller Globe. Mm-hmm. And we switched it. You know, we had a lot of industry out on the hill, out on the moor line. And they called it the moor line because that was the last town that it went to when they pulled up that track. That track used to go from Keokuk all the way up to Mount Pleasant. And Moore, M-O-O-A-R, well, that was a city just about 4 or 5 miles north. But that was as far as the line went because they'd pulled the rest of it out. And then when I started working, they even pulled that out, and it would only go out to Stone Container, Horner Box, right in that area. That's as far as it went.
You can still see
part of the roadbed there.
I think in Surface Transportation Board proceedings, it's still called the Moore Line. When there's any dispute about it.
Okay.
At least it
okay.
was up to a few years ago.
Well, there was quite a bit of history involved. It's hard to find pictures of that area as you go up into Iowa. But I've been with the internet; things pop up right and left. That's one good thing about the internet is some of the pictures that have surfaced that I would have probably never seen. But then you have to track them down because what they put on the internet is usually just a real low resolution shot. And to put it in a book, it's almost impossible.
Can you recall any particularly amusing or dangerous incidents that occurred?
I can tell you both.
Okay.
Let's back down to the bunk room of the roundhouse. And that's where the engineers stayed. The trainmen had cabooses to live on. That was their home away from home. There was 4 bunks in each caboose. So we slept in cabooses. The engineers had that coach for a bunk room. Well, every facility on the railroad had a railroad dog, a dog that they had adopted. They fed it out of their lunch boxes and everything like that. Well, they had put a 55-gallon metal drum outside the bunk room, filled it full of straw, and that was the dog's home. That's where he stayed out of the weather. Well, one of the engineers had at home burned his trash in a barrel. Well, he burned the barrel out.
Oh.
So he grabbed the dog's house, dumped all the straw out, took it home, and started a new burn barrel. Well, another engineer found out. First of all, he says, "Where's the dog's house?" Somebody says, "Well, old Ben took it home to burn his trash." So needless to say, Ben and I can't remember the guy's name. We called him Running Bear. They got in a fist fight over right there in the bunk room. So I guess you'd call that humorous. And I don't know who won. But the dog didn't, that's for sure. Well, that was one of them.
Well, while you're thinking, let me ask if you... Okay. Keith Courtney was the superintendent at the depot for the longest time.
Well, he must have got promoted. I thought he was an operator. But go ahead.
Well, he was everything.
He was in charge of the depot. Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
And I take it you knew him.
Oh, I knew him well.
Right, because he was our first interviewee.
Sure.
And that's on the website.
Okay. Did he, by chance, tell... We had a couple tragedies up there. We had 2 men killed. Actually, in my 40 years, we lost 3 trainmen. They died while on duty, you know, from an accident. 2 of them happened in Keokuk. Now, that shows how dangerous switching was. When I first hired out, my life insurance company, the Equitable, put a surcharge on my insurance policy because of my occupation. They later rescinded that and gave me a rebate of all my extra surcharges that I'd paid. But it was very dangerous, and 2 switchmen got killed while I was working on the railroad. And a 3rd switchman got killed in Fort Madison.
what caused the accident? The cars hitting them?
One of them we'll never know, because one of the fellas that the fellow that got killed was walking ahead of the movement, and he was going to spot a car up there at Scheller Globe, and he must have stumbled and fell in front of the car. The other one was down in the yard. There was about 10 tracks in the yard, and we kept cars in them, and they were pulling these cars out of the track, and he was riding the side of the cars, and someone had left a string of cars almost, well, it was too close where there wasn't any clearance for him. It had knocked him off down underneath the wheels. So that was our second. The death up at Fort Madison was where two trains hit head on. They weren't going that fast. The young, he wasn't really young. He was a retired Army man who had joined the railroad after he got out of the service. And he was on the engine, and it was stopped. And they all got off, and they were standing while this train was coming around the curve. And he decided it would be safer on the other side. And while he was crossing over, it hit, and it just lifted that engine up, and it fell right on him. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, those were sad things, and they make an impact on everyone.
Absolutely,
because
yes.
We knew them personally, right. Worked with them. And I've had my own close calls, but praise the Lord, I survived.
Amen. Mm-hmm.
We need something fun, humorous now.
Yeah, let's get some. Right. Let's get off of that.
Right.
I understand. But, you need to know the whole story. I'm sure you're aware that if you've been around Keokuk, there's a big hill coming from down on the river's edge that goes up, all the way up to those factories. So that's quite a hill. We've had a car get loose from us up there and roll all the way down. And when it got down to the bottom, and luckily it went across all 7th Street and Carbide Lane and across Johnson Street.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So as it got down to the bottom, there's a real sharp curve to the right going south towards the Des Moines River Bridge. How that car got around that curve, I don't know. Because the guys working at Hubinger said when it went around, one set of wheels on one side was off the rail. It was just leaning, because of the, centrifugal force. And then it settled down and rolled all the way to the Des Moines River.
So there was a Y track from the moor line to through the yard to the right rather than to the left as it is now.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
They built all that new approach right towards the end of my career.
I see.
And they started just down below the depot a little ways, mm-hmm. and you went on up the hill that way.
Right.
You used to go right from the middle of the yard around the big curb and follow that creek I was talking to you about.
All right.
And that was where the moor line started mm-hmm. out of the yard.
Okay, yeah. I didn't realize that
they
the
did.
Moor line had connected to the south rather than the north.
Right, originally. The moor line came in, you actually came in and it crossed the Rock Island.
The Rock Island,
and
yes.
Then it had crossovers that took you over into the yard. And then, of course, the main line was right there too, but just right beside the Rock Island main line.
Now, there was also a track that branched off the moor line once you got up the bluff and looped around and went back to where Hartrick's Lumber is.
Yes, we called that the city track. You only went around that big curve and got up around, was that 7th Street overpass? We went underneath an overpass, and I think that might have been 7th Street. Well, right there underneath 7th Street overpass, the big bridge, was a switch that backed you back into the city tracks.
Okay.
And that was where the lumber company was. And at one time, there was a freight house uptown. I'm not sure. Johnson Street somehow comes into my mindset.
From what I can tell by old maps, uh-huh. It looped around and ended pretty much at where Hartrick's Independent Lumber Company is.
On that same Facebook page, you can see pictures of it. You can see cars spotted at the freight house mm-hmm. where they would load and unload them, and there's like 3 or 4 tracks beside it.
So that was known as the city track.
We called it the city track, but you had to cross that creek too, There was a trestle there. I called it bean poles. They were just big crisps.
A wooden trestle?
Wooden trestle, yes, sir. But there was a lumber company right across that creek too. That might have been a different company than what you, because I can't recall that name. How far into the city would you go to find that?
I think as far as tents.
You know, we used to have tracks up there where you spotted cars for General Mills too, I think.
What kind of power did the Q use?
Or well, in the early days, they had steam, of course, but it was gone. The last of the steam was around the mid-50s, mm-hmm. and here I hired out in the mid-60s, so a decade they had been gone. We had small diesel engines. We called them tea kettles. There was a 600-horse switcher, and there was a 1,200-horse switcher.
Probably something like an SW1.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. But did they ever get to where they used road switcher power?
They did. They would use maybe a GP 7 or 9.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, those were good road switchers too. And then later on, they began to use more conventional road engines, you know. I can't recall the last time one of those little SW1s was used up there, but it was very early on.
Yes, I've never seen any pictures of... Actually, pictures of locomotives in Keokuk are pretty hard to find anyway.
Yeah, I know. One of those shots, it does have a picture of an SW1 switching right down there by the yard office.
That'd be nice to have. Now, you started before passenger service quit.
I did.
Through Keokuk, but that ran at night. So did you ever have any experience?
I didn't work on a passenger train, but I had to get out of the way of a passenger
train.
We had meets, and I remember putting in my time book on April the 6th,
1967,
I'm sorry, last run of number 8, and mm-hmm. met him at Louisiana, and I was working an industry down in Louisiana. And then on the way home from that, was taking cars back to Hannibal from that industry, I met him number 8 going south at Ashburn. And that was kind of a story too in and of itself. The engineer had fallen asleep while we were sitting in the siding. And then I couldn't wake him up. And finally the big old conductor came up there. He's about 6'8". He was a big guy. He woke him up, and I think he hurt his feelings because we made the fastest trip to Hannibal from Ashburn I've ever made in my life.
By the way, that's Louisiana, Missouri.
Yes.
For anybody who's listening.
Right, not Louisiana State.
Right.
We had that was probably the highest revenue station on the Burlington. It was called Hercules Chemical Company,
mm-hmm.
and they did mostly fertilizers and some other industrial solvents and things down there.
Did you interchange there with the GM&O?
GM&O, we did. Yes, mm-hmm. sir. We had a GM&O transfer track that we'd mm-hmm. shove cars around, and we would get cars from them, too. So.
When you were sleeping on the picnic table in the depot, mm-hmm. so this was after passenger service?
Yeah, there weren't, because I didn't really start switching in Keokuk till probably around 1980.
Okay.
And the only reason I remember that was I had a 1980... They called it a Datsun back then. Now it's a Nissan, but I had a yellow Datsun, and I went up on the hill to switch, and I left my lights on. So my battery was dead. That's the only reason I can remember the year that I started working up there was around 80. And I told you that in 78, that's when they moved the yard from Hannibal to Quincy. So, you know, in that 2-year time period, I finally worked my way up to Keokuk.
And what was the depot being used for at that time?
At that time, the big waiting room on the north end of the depot, it had about 10 desks in it. And the clerical positions, the people worked, you know, as clerks, each had a desk. And they were in there. And then, well, the yard office was in that place where the tickets were sold. And then the next room over, which where the men do a lot of their work.
Right, the baggage room.
Baggage room. Right. That was our locker room. And they had showers in there and lockers. And that's where we kept all our stuff and got ready for work.
Was there a dropped ceiling in the waiting room at any time?
Yes. There was a drop ceiling in there, but I remember that much. Mm-hmm. That there was.
Was it divided into partitions?
No, it was just one big open room with all those desks centered, you know.
So the Rock Island agent was in one desk and the...
You know, I don't even recall...
Another.
He may have had a room of his own someplace. Mm. I don't recall him being in there with all the Burlington personnel. Mm. I'm sure he had to be someplace. And that's very possible, you know, because there was all that area between the ticket window, if you will, and the baggage room wall. That was all kind of open area like it is now. But, I mean, it could have been partitioned off. It's funny how you, if you don't use something, you don't remember it.
No, that's right.
Yeah, and I think that's very possible. That could have been how they did it.
Did you happen to work in Keokuk through the period of the transition to the Keokuk Junction when they took over the Rock Island switching?
I did. Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. And all the Rock Island guys, for a while, some of them stayed there and worked for the KJ, these Rock Island guys. But they kind of slowly just either put their seniority in and used someplace else or... Mm-hmm. I don't recall, but they finally disappeared, and everybody that came on was more or less new hires. I remember we knew them guys, and we'd see them around the depot, and some of them even stayed in the bunk room from mm-hmm. time to time.
You were mentioning earlier something about Union depots and the issues that they
had. Right, right. Well, I only go by way of my experience with the Hannibal Union Depot. There was five railroads involved, and the Burlington actually owned the CB&Q, the Hannibal St. Joe, and the St. Louis, Keokuk, and Northwestern. Then you had the Wabash and the Katy. So they would take the officials out of the pool of railroad officials. In other words, they just didn't hire a guy off the street and say, you're superintendent of the Union Depot. They used an official from the Burlington or from the Wabash or from the Katy. And they said, you're the president of the Hannibal Union Depot. And then some of the other men that worked there probably were just hired off the street. But as long as the officials were there, they could kind of keep an eye on what was going on financially and what was being spent where and why and when. And I found in an auction a box full of correspondence one time from 1900 to 1910. And they were letters from Hannibal Union Depot personnel officials asking about this and that, different letters. One express company wrote a letter and requested an extra radiator be put in their office because they were cold. And the official wrote back and said, it seems like the fact that you have gotten by for 27 years with the number of radiators that you have, we see no need to place another radiator in your office. And if we chose to, we really couldn't because the furnace is running at maximum capacity. Now, that's kind of correspondence you saw in these files. Or why was train number 5 15 minutes late, you know, leaving the terminal last night? Or why did this car get damaged? Or that type of... So it's just intriguing reading to get into them files. One of the best ones was when somebody lost a trunk and it didn't get shipped on the baggage car to the right place. When they got there, all of his clothes and everything was gone. It didn't ever show up. But his most prized possession, his Parker double barrel shotgun, was in that trunk. And it turned out they paid him off because... They paid the claim for lost baggage. And then 2 or 3 months later, they found his trunk down in Indian Territory. They wrote this letter to him asking him if he would send the money back and they'd give him his trunk and his shotgun. And he said, no, thank you. So you see all kinds of silly things take place on those.
But Keokuk had a Union Depot company.
They did. Well, I would say it was probably much the same. Now, I don't know how they selected the heads of their department, like their president of the Union Depot. But I made that point to show you that because one railroad would not spend a nickel more than the other railroad, every bit of maintenance got deferred. Mm-hmm. And that building in Hannibal that was a showplace fell into disrepair and just crumbled around. And by the time 1953 came along, it was ready for the wrecking ball. Now, luckily, Keokuk wasn't, but I'm sure the people will tell you that there were a lot of discrepancies in the upkeep of the building by the time someone took it over.
I think in the case of Keokuk, since the CBN2 had 2 out of the 5 shares,
right,
they took the lion's share of the responsibility.
Probably so.
That's what I'm guessing. And they probably were the major promoters of the rebuilding of the depot, where they cut the roof down and put shingles
probably
on it.
Probably so,
and so
forth.
So this history is a little bit different for Keokuk, I think, in that
probably
respect.
Could be. Yeah,
and they
right.
had one superintendent who was hired by the Union Depot Company.
By the company.
Whereas this was not the same, perhaps, as a hand.
Yeah, they probably didn't handpick him from an official's pool of the other railroads. They probably hired him, and he might have been much more committed to his job than a railroad official would, who was just filling the gap, so to speak. Now, each depot had a restaurant. I've read in your all's webpage where they found, some parts of old signage and things that showed where the coffee shop or restaurant
was. There's even a picture of it on the website.
Right,
yes.
There is. And Hannibal had a fine dining room, and I've got pictures of it, and it was very extravagant. Of course, Hannibal would have been about on the same par as Keokuk Union Depot. I mean, in grandeur, they were both magnificent buildings.
You mentioned the Katy being one of the five railroads, but the Katy was gone pretty early from
it. Was. It left Hannibal in 1923, and they, all this time, even when they first opened in 1871, they had leased part of their track rights to the Wabash.
I see.
And so the Wabash just filled the gap when the Katy left town, and finally in the 40s, the Katy sold it outright to the Wabash.
Okay. By the way, that's MKT, or Missouri, Kansas, Texas.
Right. That nickname there was the Katy, just like a lady.
And the Keokuks, the St. Louis Keokuk and Northwestern, got merged into the CB&Q around 1903 or somewhere around
there. Up until right around the turn of the century, a little after 1900, all of these subsidiaries that the CB&Q actually owned and had all the controlling shares in, they kept their old name up until that time you're just speaking of, 1901 or 2. And then it was all merged into the CB&Q Railroad Company. And these railroads like this with individual names just ceased to exist. And so that's why when you find a relic that goes back to the same, initials of the predecessor company, it's fun to find, because there's a lot of history involved there.
That is quite a find to have lantern from that line.
This was found in Carthage, Illinois, which is kind of just across the river from Keokuk.
Right.
So it's very possible somebody that lived over in Illinois picked it up when it was working, for the K line.
It's in great shape.
Yeah, a lot of them are kind of like a bucket of rust, but this one here still had a lot of the tin on it. And to find the globe, I did not find when I found the frame. I found the globe up in Montrose, Iowa. A fella had it in his collection, and I swapped him out of it. We do a lot of horse trading in this hobby.
Well, that was well done.
It worked out. I married two pieces that should have been married. Yeah.
That brings up another subject. You have donated several pieces to the depot already. I think three benches, is it?
Three benches, and like I said, enough iron to make three more, as long as they find their woodworker. And then I have one more bench that I'm going to just keep until I can't keep it any longer, and I'll pass it on to you, too. Same style as what you've restored up there.
Those volunteers have done a super job with the restoration of those benches.
You should have seen them when they came down to get those. I said, now bring somebody with a strong back. And one of them had a grandson who was a football player. They might have been Steve. It seemed like it was Steve. And they had a rental truck, a U-Haul. And it took every bit of us four guys with that big, strong boy to put that 12-footer in there. It was heavy.
Well, it looks great in the depot.
It does.
Yeah. And you're going to donate a ticket case.
Yeah, there she
is. Which we see sitting right over here that was on the Santa Fe somewhere.
Came off of a Santa Fe, but, those things were of universal design. They would have been used in any depot. They used roll-top ticket cases. I probably got some other things that they could use someplace down the line.
Where would a ticket case be placed?
It would be like on a counter someplace, maybe to the left or the right of the ticket window, inside that office.
Inside the office.
And it looks like it was mounted on a wall.
Well, I don't know if it was actually mounted on a wall. It sat on a counter.
Against a wall.
Right. Yeah, right, mm-hmm. right. That's my... In fact, if you look at that one picture that someone put on Facebook of, I think there was a Mr. Grogan and another fella, and it shows a little bit of the interior of that office. If you look closely, you can almost decipher a ticket case sitting there on one of them walls, if you look at that picture.
Now we know what to look for.
Yeah,
We'll take another look.
Yeah, and I worked with a Mike Grogan, and he was a switchman, but he got hurt. Mm-hmm. He got hurt in the yard, hurt his back, and, had to take a settlement or some kind of a early retirement. But Mike was a switchman and a yard master. I wish I could have remembered some of the funnier things.
I like the one about the dog. I just wish they had found another place for him.
Well, maybe they did somehow. After the big fist fight, maybe they was able to... maybe they took him into the coach and let him stay inside. Oh, that reminds me of another story about a roundhouse dog. This happened in Hannibal, but it's kind of universal. They had a roundhouse dog, and in the locker room, they had these tall wall lockers. They weren't small ones, they were tall ones. And they saw this guy coming in to work, and there was a dog in the washroom there, and they put this dog in this tall wall locker of this guy that they saw coming. And then they eased the door shut, so here's this big dog standing on his back legs with his paws up against the inside of the door. And when that guy opened up his locker, that dog fell right out on his chest. Now that would be a thrill, wouldn't it?
Yeah, right.
I think that'd make your old ticker start ticking. Oh, there were some crazy things.
Well, it's good to have a dog story because we already have a cockroach story.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
In our oral history interview.
Oh, well, I'm sure there was a few of them around.
Yeah. That was when Purity Oats was next door.
Sure.
They were all over the place then.
Now, back when you guys were all in the bunks or in the cabooses and so forth, what did you do for entertainment? Or were you too tired out at the end of the day to...
You usually just slept, and you cooked your own meals in there.
I was wondering where you
had a pantry on the wall, and you had a cook stove because it was for body warmth mainly, but it had a big enough top that you could cook on it. It was coal-fired. You put coal in it. And a lot of the guys, railroad men, were notoriously heavy drinkers. And, of course, there was a rule against drinking. It was called Rule G.
Rule G.
So, but, they didn't really enforce it as tough as they could have. And so these guys would go out, and they might go out and drink or bring a six-pack back to the way car.
Quite a few places to choose from in Keokuk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember some of the names, but I can't remember them now. I mean, I remember if I heard it, I'd know what it was.
Well, now, since they cook their own food, typically railroad men would go to a beanery somewhere near the tracks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Were there restaurants fairly close by that you would go to?
You had to go uptown. Chuck Wagon was a good place.
Yeah.
And if you went further out Main Street, there was kind of like a bar and grill called Chintz's.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of that?
I have.
And they had the best cheeseburgers in town. But right along the river front, there just wasn't any retail places to eat. But you went up on a hill and got out on Main Street and you found them. There was another one, I can't remember the name of it, but it was kind of about a block south of Maine, someplace around 6th or 7th. A little tiny thing. I worked with a fella, he was a switchman, his name was Jack Mann, a great guy. I think he's passed on. But I kind of remember a story. In fact, he gave me one of these. They used to rent a building uptown, and they had, every Halloween, they'd have a Halloween party, and they'd wear costumes. Well, they found this big chest full of baseball uniforms in this building, and they said Colonel across the front. Well, he gave me one because he knew my boy collected baseball cards. What we found out was there was a minor league club in Keokuk called the Keokuk Colonels, mm-hmm. with a K, like a kernel of corn.
Yeah, corn.
And probably because of the big Hoobinger facilities mm-hmm. there. So we've still got that, and it's an old flannel, or not flannel, the itchy wool type uniform from probably in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. But this group they were in would put on all those uniforms and wear them to the Halloween party. Little did they know, they might have had Roger Maris's original right. uniform. He played for the Keokuk Colonels.
Tim McCarver played there.
Tim did too. Yeah, Timmy. But we had a good time working around Keokuk. Those Iowa boys, they were pretty good kids. They really were. You had to kind of crack the ice with them, though. They were a little clannish when you got up there, but when they saw you weren't afraid of work, they took to you.
So about what was the last time you switched the Keokuk yard?
I'm going to say it was probably about just before 2000, in the mm-hmm. late 90s.
Late 90s.
Yeah. By the time the turn of the century came around, I had enough whiskers, mm-hmm. seniority. That I was the oldest brakeman by then, and I could hold any job I wanted. So yeah, everything on the railroad was seniority. And so you got your pick of the jobs, and I placed on a job that, even though it worked at night, I didn't have to go to St. Louis, or I didn't have to go to Burlington. So I placed on that job. I stayed there about the last 6 years. We used to have a job that worked at the ARCO plant up around Fort Madison, north of Fort Madison, actually. And I think it's another name now. And that was the coldest place in the world. Coming off, it was right along that Mississippi River, and there wasn't any trees or anything to block the wind, and I spent many a cold night out there.
So what kind of hours would you keep? What shift did you usually...
Well, when you worked on the road, it was just...
Whichever. Yeah.
But you sometimes, many times, work 16 hours straight. That was a federal law that's called the Hog Law. And I think the Hog Law was passed back in about 1916 or something. But the federal government mandated you cannot work over 16 hours. But these guys were so hungry for money that they would put down time on duty 15 hours and 59 minutes. So they could come right back to work 8 hours later. Because if you work 16, they had to give you 10 hours off instead of 8. But later on in about 1970, the federal government changed that hog law to 14. It went down to 14. And 1 year later, they dropped it to 12. And the unions wanted to get it all the way down to 10, but they never got that done.
So hog stand for hours?
Yeah, hog in that terminology had something to do with just working as many hours as you could. Mm-hmm. Hogger was a nickname for the engineer. Now, I don't know if they're synonymous with one another, but you called the engineer a hogger. You called the fireman a fire boy. You called the brakeman a hack. And you called the switchman a snake. And he was called a snake because those initials were acronyms for the union they were in. I couldn't tell you what that union was. But they called them snakes because of the abbreviated union letter. You know, on the railroad, if you didn't get a nickname, you hadn't arrived.
So did you have one?
Oh, I had one. Mine wasn't as fancy as a lot of guys. They called me Circus Train. And there's a little story that goes along with that, if you got time. I was on a train. We hauled circuses, okay? Mm-hmm. So I was on this train. It just so happened that was a night that I decided to take. I had a clear lantern, you know, and I had oil in it. And I decided to take it and say, I want to see what it'd be like working with one of these things. Well, you can't see anything. The reason for a lantern at night was so the engineer would see you moving. But you can't see anything around you. Here I am walking along, afraid I'm going to fall right on my face. And I'm walking along this circus train. Well, you know what else is on circus trains? Lions and tigers and bears. In cages. Yeah. Thank goodness. I walked past the lion's cage just about the time as one lion let out a big roar. And here all I had was this little glimmer. I got out of there so fast. But I told the engineer about it, and he hung that tag on me. Circus train.
I like that.
Well, that's cute. That was one of the nicer ones. There was...
So these were the big circuses then. They weren't like...
Right, they were Barnum and Bailey and Ringling.
They had hundreds and hundreds of people. Right?
Oh, yeah. These trains might be 30, 40 cars long.
Yeah.
Because the rear end of the train was made up of coaches where they lived and slept. Mm-hmm. And the head end was all of their wagons and cages and animals and things. So it was very interesting, Oda.
So the elephants didn't come with the trains, I assume.
Well, you know, I think they did, but I never saw one. All I saw was the cats. Or all I heard was the cats. I didn't stick around to see it. But I there's a picture on the Facebook page of an elephant going across Bank Street, downriver, down below the depot. And this is a circus entourage parade heading up towards town from down there where the yards would be. And there's an elephant, and he's got his head up against one of the wagons, and he's pushing, and something else that's hooked onto the wagon is, and it goes back that far to horse and wagon days. And that is on the historic Keokuk Facebook page, too. Mm. So you go through them, and you go way back, and you'll see that circus train right there below the depot. But I have found a world of stuff. I would love to see the day that you guys get rid of them cars in front of the depot.
So,
and I'm sure you would, too. But where to put them? Well, where to put them?
Even if we could free up one or two tracks near the depot, it would be helpful.
Because you want to start work on that train shed soon, it sounds like.
We sure do. Yeah.
See, he called it the train shed?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, we know.
Been trying to get them to not call it the canopy.
Right. Oh, the canopy?
The train shed.
Right. So I did. The letter says, a.k.a. train shed.
That's right. Well, therein lies probably a nightmare. There's probably so much lead paint on that thing. Mm-hmm. It's been painted so many times over the years.
But I think that's what's kept it standing.
Probably.
It's actually in quite good condition. All we need to do is get the lead paint off and then repaint it.
It'll be wonderful.
Well, as we've talked about your career with the CB&Q, the Burlington Northern and then BNSF Railway, we've really appreciated your reminiscences, Archie, about the Keokuk Union Depot and your other railroad employment experience. It's been a fascinating time to listen to you, and we really appreciate the time you've been willing to spend with us. So we want to thank you.
And for all that you've done for the depot.
Yes.
It's just wonderful. We appreciate it.
I hope I can do more, and it's fun to reminisce and to share these memories.
It certainly really is, and we're very grateful that you could spend this time with us. So thank you so much.
You bet.
Thank you.